It's the morning show. I'm Shereen Seward in for Kate Archer Kent. Though the number of women running for seats in the U.S. House of Representatives is down slightly, 2022 is setting records for women seeking offices in the U.S. Senate and in gubernatorial races, particularly among Republicans. Numbers are also up among women of traditionally underrepresented ethnic backgrounds this year, according to analysis by the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers University. Join us in this conversation at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kelly Dittmar is an associate professor of political science at Rutgers University. She is director of research at the Center for American Women and Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics. Kelly, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Emily Kane is the executive director of Emily's List. That is a national political action committee that helps elect pro-choice Democratic women into office. Emily, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. It's so great to be with you this morning.
Kelly, this week marked another wave of election primaries around the country, including in Wisconsin. What are your takeaways from the results?
Yeah, I mean, this week's election saw some ups and some kind of status or loss for women. Probably the most notable is that we now have nominated a woman for the at-large seat in Vermont for the U.S. House, a state that, to the surprise of probably many, has never elected a woman to Congress. So I think that's the sort of headline for women, that we will finally, or most likely, no longer have that gap of representation in Vermont in terms of congressional representation. Across other states and levels, I think we didn't see the successes for women that maybe some would have hoped. You know, when you think about Wisconsin, it doesn't look like there'll be particular gains for women's representation at the congressional or statewide level, certainly potentially at the lieutenant governor's position with Sarah Rodriguez, but then losing somebody like Sarah Godlewski, who decided to drop out of the Senate race. So kinds of ups and downs, perhaps leaving us to more of a stasis than anything. And then in some other states, we're watching to see if incumbents, incumbent women in the House in particular, might have a hard time or be able to retain seats in the general election. So somebody like Angie Craig in Minnesota. So again, I think Vermont being the headline of this week and watching that in the general election.
Emily, your organization supports Democratic women running for offices. How are the candidates you support faring in recent state primaries?
Well, you know, our candidates are doing great. And what we're seeing across the country is not only more women running, but really an incredible increase in the number of multi-women primaries as well, which is exciting for an organization like Emily's List that since 1985 has been working to elect Democratic pro-choice women to office. So many of our women, like Becca Ballant, who I believe will be the congresswoman from Vermont, are history makers, are groundbreakers. We still have a lot of history making and groundbreaking to do in this country, not just for women, but particularly for women of color in high office. That's why we're so excited to have women like Catherine Cortez Masto, the senator from Nevada, running for re-election, but also women like Sherry Beasley and Val Demings running for the Senate from North Carolina and Florida, because right now we have no Black women in the United States Senate, and we need to change that.
We're talking about the record number of women seeking elected office this year with Kelly Dittmar and Emily Kane. Kelly is director of research at the Center for American Women and Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics. Emily is the executive director of Emily's List. It's a political action committee that aims to help elect pro-choice Democratic women into office. A record number of women are receiving major party nominations for governor this year. Emily, what's your reaction to that trend?
It's about time. Let's just call it what it is. Emily's List has helped elect 16 governors in our history. That's simply not enough. And this year, we're excited to be supporting women running up, like Stacey Abrams in Georgia, Deirdre DeGeer in Iowa, Nellie Gorbea in Rhode Island, Katie Hobbs in Arizona, Maura Healey in Massachusetts, Tina Kotek in Oregon, Nan Whaley in Ohio, who can join the women governors that we have in place right now. Governor Whitmer, of course, in Michigan, Janet Mills in Maine, Michelle Lujan Grisham in New Mexico, Laura Kelly in Kansas, Kathy Hochul in New York. The list goes on and on. This is a game-changing time for women in leadership, and it's especially exciting when it comes to women governors, because this is really another level of glass ceiling for women is often the executive level office. And we see that the barriers there are harder and higher and tougher. And we see these women, who many of whom would make history in their own states, winning this fall, and we're excited and proud to be with them running strong campaigns.
One of the biggest questions would be why? And I mean, Kelly, why do you think more women are drawn to running for office than ever before?
I think we've seen trends, of course, over the last few cycles, with women really saying, you know, we cannot sit on the sidelines. And so there's a sense of urgency. Surely after the election of Donald Trump, and we saw the increase of women's participation across politics, it wasn't just running for office, but it was being engaged in other ways. Of course, I want to be careful that a lot of these women were already engaged. You know, they were community leaders, they were activists, and they're just presented a greater opportunity and also political environment in which folks were demanding something different. And women, for better or worse, are still different in politics. They're still underrepresented at every level of office. Women are over half of the population and you know, a third or less of elected office holders across levels. And so they present new perspectives, new lived experiences that we need in a representative democracy. And I think not only were women seeing the need for those voices in government on key policy issues, but those other voters who were kind of sick of the status quo and saw, you know, the danger of sticking with what we've done for so long, which was have only white men in leadership, were saying, okay, we also need something different. So I think it's a combination of the women themselves putting themselves forward, and also voters seeing the importance and value of a more representative democracy. And, you know, when we think about the highest levels like governor, it's not to say those barriers have gone away. We know they haven't. Things like money, things like gatekeepers, you know, those who are in control of recruitment and who get to decide who runs. We know this happens and we know women haven't always been at those tables. But, you know, Emily's group, Emily's List and other organizations have really pushed some of those really stubborn institutions that have been run and controlled by men to open the door to women. Or if not open the door, those groups have helped women just push through without the support of those gatekeepers.
Emily, I'm curious about the challenges that Republican women face compared to Democratic women. Are there differences there?
You know, I have to say, I think probably, first of all, I should say, I don't really know from a personal perspective. And Emily's List, we only work with Democratic pro-choice women. But when we look across you know, the spectrum of challenges facing women in elected office, you really do have the kind of obstacles that you heard Kelly outline. But I think there's a real important difference between where Democrats are and where Republicans are, particularly in recent years. And this year, it's taking center stage with the overturn of Roe versus Wade. We're really seeing two parties that treat, value, and respect women differently. You have the Republican Party that has just taken an anti-abortion, anti-woman, extreme anti-choice position, period, full stop. It's no wonder that we're seeing women, independent women, Republican women, come our way in key races around the country, whether we're talking about, you know, statewide Senate races and gubernatorial races, or you look at what happened in Kansas last week with the resounding rejection of an anti-choice measure on the Kansas ballot. So I think this is, while the obstacles around gatekeepers and money may be the same, the parties themselves are different when it comes to, again, valuing the role, the voice, and the leadership of women, particularly a more diverse group of women, which is really where you've seen the Democratic Party head in recent years. And in no small part, I'm very proud to say, because of the work and the commitment and the hustle of Emily's List and the women we support.
Kelly Dittmar is Director of Research at the Center for American Women in Politics. Emily Kane is the Executive Director of the Political Action Committee, Emily's List. We'll continue our conversation about more women running for political office in 2022, and you can join. 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Show. I'm Shereen Seward. I had a look at a women's leadership initiative in Green Bay, but first, we resume our discussion on the record-breaking number of women seeking political office in 2022. Join in this conversation, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Rutgers University political scientist Kelly Dittmar and Emily Kane from the Political Action Committee, Emily's List, stay with us. Emily, you were a state legislator in Maine for a decade, the youngest House minority leader in Maine's history. What particular challenges do women have compared to men when they're seeking elected office?
Well, you know, I was 24 when I was first elected. And I remember when I first got to the State House in Maine, how many people asked me which office I worked in or perhaps who I was interning for that year. I'll never forget how, in fact, how the smiles would light up on their faces when I would say, actually, I'm the state representative from Orono. And it was like immediately just changing their idea of what an elected official looks like, what an elected official might seem like. And I will say, you have some great examples right there in Wisconsin. Not only Sarah Rodriguez, who I believe will be the next lieutenant governor, who I met with earlier this year, but I was in Wisconsin and met with minority leader Greta Neubauer, also, I believe, who was the youngest woman to ever be the minority leader in Wisconsin history, and talked with her about the strategy she has by running candidates in key districts to prevent a Republican supermajority, something that would be very bad for the people of Wisconsin. But I would say for me, this is really about changing, and the work of Emily's List is about changing the idea of what an elected official looks like, whether that's her age, whether that's the color of her skin, her religion, her career, her background, recognizing that government is stronger when it looks like the people it's supposed to represent. And that was certainly my experience as a young woman in the Maine legislature. And I think the experience of women leaders across the country as they step up to run and win.
Record numbers of Black women are running for governor and in congressional races as well. More Hispanic and Asian and Pacific Islander women are running for high-profile offices as well. Kelly, are Democrats or Republicans doing better at finding strong candidates who are women of color?
Yeah, I mean, Democrats have both historically and this election are still, you know, outperforming, if you will, the Republicans in terms of the diversity of women, the racial and ethnic diversity of women that are running, that are winning nominations, and we can expect winning election in November. And it does speak to differences in recruitment, differences in policy agendas, differences in direct appeals and a sort of intentionality of messaging and inclusion by the parties themselves. We did see in the last cycle some increase in the racial and ethnic diversity of women elected in the Republican Party. We saw that particularly in the U.S. House with some new Republican Latinas and Republican women who were Asian American who were elected to the House last cycle. But those numbers are still very low in regard to the overall diversity of women. And so this is an issue that the Republican Party has repeatedly said, you know, they're working on, but I think it has been really hard to see those numbers increase in as significant a way as we've seen on the Democratic side, where we are getting to a point where the women in office, especially in some states and even in the U.S. House, are becoming closer and closer to majority women of color or close to that. And that would be, again, reflective of the population.
We're talking about the large number of women running for political office this year with Emily Kane and Kelly Dittmar. Emily is the executive director of Emily's List, which aims to help elect pro-choice Democratic women. Kelly is director of research at the Center for American Women in Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics. Emily, what impact did the Roe decision have on candidates who came out to run for office this year?
You know, I think this really goes back to, it does go back to the election of Donald Trump, right? It goes back to Brett Kavanaugh. It goes back to Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation. And the fact that for women across the country, the writing has been on the wall for a long time that Republicans wanted to overturn Roe and were taking the steps, and no matter what they were, to get the Supreme Court in that position. So when the leak happened earlier this year, the first week of May, to be honest, I think we were all sort of took a collective, oh my goodness, moment, because it really was as bad as we thought it could be. And then it bore out in the final decision at the end of June. But what I will say is the women running for office, they were already there. They were already galvanized. They were already committed to this issue because this is really an issue about personal freedom, the ability to make your own healthcare decisions, no matter where you live, no matter what your state is and where your zip code is. And now what we're seeing is Republicans pushing a national abortion ban. We heard it from Mitch McConnell himself. That raises the stakes. So I think the candidates are already there. What you will see is them centering this even more in their campaign messaging this fall, telling the truth about the difference between Democratic pro-choice candidates who want people to be able to make their own healthcare decisions and anti-choice Republicans who would like to see a national abortion ban or want to ban abortion with no exceptions at all. And so as we head into the fall, this is not just about our candidates. This is about what it does for turnout. We saw that in Kansas as well, with very high turnout for an off-year election, well, a midterm sort of primary day election. And we expect that that will carry through into November, again, not just galvanizing Democrats, but galvanizing women voters overall and Republican women to vote for Democratic candidates, because this issue is so salient and so personal.
We have Marcus on the line from Milwaukee. Marcus, welcome.
Hi. So I'm a father of I have four daughters. I just want to say I think it's fantastic, regardless of party, women excelling and getting into office, because that way when my daughters see it, that I can say, hey, you know, like America, this is what it is. Dream as big as you want and go for it. The other thing I'd just like to say quick is that with the abortion issue, I feel like to Republicans, I'm a little confused as how you can be pro-life and pro-military at the same time.
Thanks, Marcus. Kelly, what do you say to that?
Yeah, I think that Marcus is pointing to the importance of, you know, why representation of women matters. And there's different reasons. You know, number one, there's certainly just a fairness and legitimacy reason, right? Our government is supposed to be a representative democracy, and it is not representative in terms of gender, in terms of race and ethnicity and other lines of identity. And so the more women we get into office and the more diversity of the greater diversity of those women, hopefully it is seen as more legitimate and fair that those in office are representing all of those views. Secondly, it matters for the reasons he mentioned. There are symbolic effects of seeing women in leadership, and especially at the highest levels of leadership. You've heard the phrase, of course, that Marion Wright Edelman said, you know, you can't be what you can't see. And we know that's true. We talk to elected women every day who talk to young women and young people and say, you know, it really does make a difference for them to see me in this office. And lastly, we know it matters substantively. On every issue across the board, it matters to have a diverse set of opinions in democratic deliberation that includes issues around reproductive rights, but basic policy issues that are dealt with every day in legislatures, on tax policy, on education policy. And so we know that having a range of perspectives and lived experiences among women matters substantively to what will ultimately come out of these legislatures and executive offices. So I think he points to one reason among many why we need to see more representation of women across levels of office.
James from Milwaukee called, but he couldn't stay with us. He has a question for Emily, wondering why Emily's List supports Democratic women specifically as opposed to all women candidates. Emily?
Thank you. It's a question we get a lot. And for us, it really goes back to Democratic pro-choice women are the women we believe need to be better represented in government because of all the reasons you just heard Kelly outline. And in our two-party structure in the United States, for us, we take the we are working in the side of the Democratic Party to make change, to bring that diversity of perspective and representation. But I will say to James's question, I wish there was a Republican Emily's List focused on electing pro-choice Republican women. But the reality is right now, there aren't enough of them to have an organization, and the party platform and donors simply will not support it. So we choose to make change inside the Democratic Party at the tables of power, up and down the ballot all across the country, because representation does matter. But when you elect Democratic pro-choice women, you're electing people who trust women, who understand the stories of women all across the country coming from all backgrounds, and you get better policy outcomes. And that's really what it's all about.
Emily, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Kelly, thank you so much for being here as well.
Thank you.
Kelly Dittmar is Director of Research at the Center for American Women and Politics. Emily Kane is the Executive Director of Emily's List. Just ahead, we explore an institute in Green Bay that provides resources to women to advance their careers with a mission of creating a stronger and more equitable workforce. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seewert. We'll talk after this news update next on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Shereen Seewert in for Kate Archer-Kent. Let's rise together. That's the goal of a women's leadership program that has a key mission of advancing women both personally and professionally at all stages of their career through a number of initiatives, including knowledge workshops and networking opportunities that promote ongoing success. Janet Bonkowski is the executive director of the Institute for Women's Leadership at UW Green Bay. Janet, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Shereen. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You can join in this conversation, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. The Institute offers certificates, credentials, networking for women who want to advance in their careers. How does the Institute help women particularly?
Well, that is such a fantastic question. And the Institute is really something, it's a big idea for Northeast Wisconsin. It's a big idea, and it's designed to meet women where they are. And you know, we hear that language a lot these days. But it's a unique resource. It's very unique compared to others that I've experienced in my own career, and I think others have as well. It's ongoing and continuous in nature, meaning that there are opportunities for engagement and networking that happen when an individual or their organization or their employees need it. It's very flexible. It's tailored to busy, busy women. We are also busy. So this is designed so that people can come in and out of the offerings of the Institute, whether they are formal or informal. And it's also really an affordable professional development or career development opportunity, which is so important to the region that we serve here in Northeast Wisconsin and the students that we serve of all ages, including women leaders and rising leaders. So again, we do this through some informal and formal opportunities for connection and networking and education. Informal, things like we call them caffeinated conversations. So if you need a morning jolt of networking or inspiration, come join us for a conversation. They're held monthly. They're held at local coffee shops throughout the region. And we select a topic, something very topical that women are interested in and talking about. And we hold a kind of a group community conversation around that. We also hold something called Stories from Experience, where we bring a woman leader from the region, someone who has kind of been there, done that, who can tell her story, and we can listen and learn and be inspired and ask questions about the leadership journey that might help other aspiring and rising leaders in the region.
I noticed that you mentioned specifically your region. What challenges are women in northeastern Wisconsin specifically facing when they're trying to advance their careers?
Well, they're certainly facing similar challenges that we see across the state of Wisconsin and across the nation as well. So the challenges of being having childcare responsibilities as well as family and parent care responsibilities. There are the challenges of trying to work through and balance those issues. There we have our research. We did a survey last summer, right about this time, asking women in the region, you know, kind of where are your great challenges, and so things, gender inequity continue to be an issue. In advancement, in pay and in compensation, educational opportunities, some of the things that they experience within the workplace, whether it's harassment or lack of support. So some of those same things that we see in other areas of the country. One thing that's been really interesting as we have worked to build the Institute is we have an advisory board that's come together, and these women represent and come from other areas of the country who have different leadership experiences and workplace experiences, as well as being here regionally. And for those individuals who join us from other parts of the country, the southern part of the country, the East Coast, other areas, they tell us that women in the workplace in Wisconsin, it's different. It's different, and we have room to improve.
We're talking about UW Green Bay's Institute for Women's Leadership with Janet Bonkowski. She's the executive director of the program. So how is it different? What makes this program unique?
Well, again, the program is unique in several ways. It's this informal opportunities for education and inspiration that we talked about a little bit. The certificates are designed to also provide women with opportunities for education and learning to fill gaps that they may have had previously in their career. So we have a rising certificate for women who are just wrapping up their education and entering the workforce or in it for, you know, their first few years. So at that entry level role, we have an advanced certificate program, which is for women who are, you know, mid-career, and then an executive level for those who are approaching some of those senior level roles. And again, programs and topics that look to fill gaps that may not have been that a woman may not have encountered or had the opportunity to do or be involved in yet in her career. So how can we help fill those gaps? These are sessions that are offered as a certificate, but we're also offering them what we would call as individual sessions or a la carte. So you may just want one particular session at one time because you're looking for something very, very specific and very niche. And we are absolutely open and receptive to that. Again, trying to be as flexible as possible, giving women grace, come in and out of this program. Again, suddenly you, as a woman, balancing all those things that we need to balance in our work and family, personal and professional lives, you may realize that and think you're able to take on a full certificate program, and then realize that something's happened, a dynamic in your world has changed, and you need to pivot and maybe take one session, and that's absolutely fine. So we're really trying to provide that support and understanding and grace as we build this to come in and out of it. We're here for you. We're a continuous resource. We're not one event. We're not an annual seminar or conference, but we are here kind of as an ongoing current to provide that support that women need. Well, one of the things that was really interesting in the research that we did is this concept of support that women are telling us that they're looking for in their workplace. And I think when we talk about that in our organizations and companies, I think that the first reaction to that is maybe off-putting. It could be overwhelming, because what in the world can we do to give, you know, this people what they're looking for? And I think it's simpler. It can be. It may not be as complicated, I think, is the word that I'm looking for, as we think it is. So, or as daunting. I think that there are resources within reach, things like the Institute for Women's Leadership, for example, programming, opportunities for connection. That's support. And sure. So if I can go to an event in the morning and be inspired by other women who may, with a conversation and a cup of coffee, with respect to another topic that I am equally challenged with, and I can leave there feeling, you know, on fire and like $1 million, that is support for my employer that's invaluable. And I am great for the rest of the day and the week. And beyond.
And you've mentioned the caffeinated conversations, those the series of panel discussions with women business leaders hosted sure. by coffee shops. How do you choose the topics, and how do you choose the speakers?
Well, so the topics, we take a look. We, as a group of women who are actively involved in developing the curriculum and the programming, we take a look at what's going on in the marketplace. So we're what's trending, what are women talking about, whether it's in, you know, in our own lives, what we're experiencing ourselves, what we're seeing in the media, what we're seeing on social media. So those are some of our inputs, but we also look to the research, actually. So we look to the research that we did last year, and we said, okay, here are things that we're hearing from with respect to, you know, is it communication? Is it, you know, demystifying leadership? So what are, you know, people here in our region, our 16 counties from Marinette through Green Bay, Manitowoc, and Sheboygan, what are they telling us that, you know, they want and need more information and support on? And so, and that's a community conversation. So whoever comes to the coffee, those are our presenters, and we have a conversation and share openly. When we have the other conversations, and we are there's stories from experience, we look around the marketplace and again look to women who we've encountered, networked with previously, whom we would say, this is someone who has a really interesting story. They've been some, you know, but we all have an interesting story. So inevitably, sure. But how can we look to someone who we would say, boy, that someday I want to be Shireen. How did Shireen get there? I want to be Shireen, and I want to know her story. And so, and sometimes we find that those stories are very similar to our own, and sometimes we find that they are so incredibly different and rich and diverse, and but always full of something that we can be inspired by and learn from together.
It sounds like it's all about learning from one another.
There is a lot of that, from the informal piece of it. Absolutely. So we've created the Institute, we really see that women have three things that they need to grow and advance. And those things are connection and networking and education. And so, again, we're looking to find just a variety of ways to enable that and make it happen. And as we grow and build the Institute, we're being experimental. We are putting some things out into the marketplace and, you know, watching carefully and seeing what's resonating and what people are responding to and women are responding to. And then we're going to, and organizations, and then we're going to adjust and modify and, you know, build accordingly.
Janet Bunkowski is the Executive Director of the Institute for Women's Leadership at UW Green Bay. Coming up, what's ahead for the Institute in the coming months, what to watch for? Join in this discussion at 800-642-1234. I'm Shireen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Shireen Seward. We return to our conversation about a program that seeks to empower women personally and professionally through a variety of initiatives. Join with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Janet Bonkowski, the Executive Director of the Institute for Women's Leadership at UW-Green Bay, is with us for the next 10 minutes. The Institute launched in March last year in the middle of a pandemic. So what challenges did you face trying to help women talk and network when social distancing practices were more common because of COVID-19?
So I think we face, Shireen, the same challenges that I believe every organization and entity faces is how do you foster a meaningful connection? So we did the best that we could utilizing technology and Teams and Zoom conversations. And we moved through the pandemic like everyone else. So how can we and initially, if we remember way back when, we were also hungry for connection.
Yes.
That was okay. Mm-hmm. We were like fine. If I can see it through a screen, I'll do it through a screen. So that's how we worked through that first year. Connected with people and social as well, of course, and social media opportunities and websites, but worked through that and supported each other, knowing that we're all in this together, having those conversations, but knowing full well that ultimately we did some streaming things. Ultimately, we wanted to get back to in person. So bringing people together for those really rich face-to-face personal interaction. So we did the best we could. We launched in the pandemic. We celebrated that in April of this year with a large in-person event. So again, like most organizations, the university was able to get to a point of feeling very comfortable bringing people together. Do that in April with a celebrate event for the community, people in the community who wanted to come and participate. And we had a fantastic outpouring of individuals. About 400 women came together. We had a presenter, Denise Hamilton, who talked with us and just really inspired and set a fire. She set a fire for us. And that momentum has been carrying us now into the summer months. Allowing us to again look at programming and how we program for the future, and also the certificates programming that we're offering and the two new ones that are kicking off this fall and are still being enrolled for. Lots of opportunity yet, and runway for people to check those out on our website. So we're excited. We are excited, and again, just really committed to building this pipeline of women leaders for the region, because this is what the region needs to continue to be viable and successful. It's really interesting. Research shows, and your previous caller talked about this too, the statistics that we keep going back to, women comprise 50% of the population, but only 20% of the leadership roles or positions in at the C-suite level, as we like to call them, or board roles. So there's that piece of information. And then we know that research shows, including research from organizations like McKinsey and Forbes, that organizations that have more women in leadership roles are more profitable. So when you take those things and put them together, it's like a disconnect, right? So why wouldn't we want to support and engage and build that leadership pipeline of women so that our regions and our economies and our livelihoods can be more sustainable.
Sure. Just a production note. I wanted to alert our producers in Madison that my computer screens went down. I'm busy signing back in, so just if you can be patient with me for a little bit, but we'll continue our conversation right now. Tell me a little bit about your future plans for the program. What do you see down the road?
Oh, so down the road we have so many interesting ideas and initiatives. And so, which is really wonderful when you come out of not only a pandemic, but when you're building and launching someone new, there are ideas all over the place. We're grabbing them and we're capturing them. But we have to be able to move through them one by one. So exciting things that we're talking about. We are from the simple things. For example, we are right now we go to our regional communities. Next week we are in Manitowoc holding one of our caffeinated conversations. And so we take that on the road, Manitowoc, Sheboygan, Green Bay, Marinette. What we've found is that there is an appetite in those communities, not just for us to come once or twice a year, but can on a monthly basis. So we're looking around, how do we build that and make that happen? And do we engage local women leaders who can help with those conversations? So that's exciting to us. We're looking at how do we provide some coaching and mentoring support for women in the region. We know that there's an interest in one-on-one. So the things that we're doing right now are group focused, but there's an interest in some one-on-one. There's interest in some additional targeted or niche peer group conversations where maybe you bring together women who are women who are in a certain industry, human resource leaders or radio host leaders who all want to get together and talk about some of their challenges.
What has been your favorite thing about the program so far? What is the favorite aspect of it?
I love when women have an opportunity to come together and you can see them light up and believe in themselves and have confidence in themselves to take on whatever is next. And they know that and believe that if they have these connections and this network around them, that anything is possible. So when women lift each other up, when they do that, and so we are all, so I just love that. You can see it. You can just see when they are fired up and you've ignited something. I just think that is so incredible and so powerful and so hopeful for our future. I should mention one more thing. We talked about opportunities for the future. The other thing that we're doing is we're having a lot of conversations and looking for more with companies and organizations in the region who might be establishing their own employee resource group and putting in place something for female leaders within their organization. So those are wonderful. That's something that we've seen develop and emerge over the last decade or two. In organizations, they see the value of doing that. They also see the challenge in how do you resource that and how do you support that. So the Institute is here to work with those organizations as well and say, if there's anything that we can do to help you with programming or information or content as you build that internal resource, we're here for that too. We are absolutely here for that too.
Janet, thank you so much for this fascinating conversation. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for the opportunity. And Shereen, I want to be you someday.
I want to be you. Janet Bonkowski is the Executive Director of the Institute for Women's Leadership of UW Green Bay. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.